And we are back once again right here on the number one rated business show. Like I told you, I'm committed to bringing some of the best individuals in the Georgia area to you guys in business, in medicine, in health. I mean, everywhere, all over the board. Today, we're celebrating a special day. It's Physicians Day, Doctors Day. So today, I got two special women with me today. Two doctors from Body. I'm not even going to go there. Dr. Barry and Dr. Femi Lucy. How are we doing today?
Good.
Thank you for having us. It's all the bees that mess me up.
It's all good.
I'm sorry.
Good.
But if you would, just give our audience the official name of the practice.
Breast, Body, Beauty, Plastic, and Reconstructive
Surgery. All right. Now, I'm first of all, honored to have you guys here in the studio with me today. So definitely I appreciate y'all taking time out your busy schedules, because I know plastics is a field that's blowing up right now. Y'all do the Brazilian butt lift?
We do it all. But we do it safely.
Yeah, because I've seen some nightmares.
And like, naturally.
Why are these people going down to Mexico?
Because of cost.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but you get what you pay for.
Well, let's back up a little bit and let's start from what got you into this field? Because this is typically not a field that you see a lot of black surgeons in. Honestly, it's funny, all over medicine, we start to really look at the statistics and we see that we only like 1-2% of most of these fields. And I know with you, you doctors, I mean, you guys are doing something truly historic, because I don't think there's another black ran plastics practice anywhere in the nation.
Well, there's black-owned plastic surgeons.
Not by two female doctors. Offense,
but definitely not two black female doctors. And so I feel very honored to bring Dr. Femi Lucy on board so that we can provide exceptional service, or continue to provide exceptional service to all of our patients, and really have this kind of really groundbreaking moment within plastic surgery. But, you know, going back to your question, what started at least me into the field, you know, the variety of plastic surgery is very attractive. You could be operating from head to toe, young to old, you know, really on almost any surface of the body. And then also, you know, the types of patients that we work with, they're awesome. They're relatively healthy. So, you know, we don't really have to deal with a lot of morbidity within our field.
Okay.
And so the improvement, the way in which you can improve the quality of life of a patient is really what's most rewarding. So I tell people all the time, I may not be saving a life like physically by doing heart surgery, but I might be saving one by drastically improving someone's quality of life.
Oh yeah, I mean, for some people it is life-saving procedures, because when you've dealt with a certain issue that's made you feel bad for so long and all this other type of stuff, it's like when you finally have that lifted off you, it's definitely life-changing.
Absolutely.
I think for sure the psychological impact of some of the procedures that we perform is really, really groundbreaking for some patients. But echoing a lot of what Dr. Barron said, there's a level of creativity and artistry that comes with plastic surgery that you just don't get from other specialties. But then you also have, you really get to connect with your patients, and really you can truly, truly form those connections with them. And restoring form, restoring function, it's something that really sets plastic surgery apart from a lot of other specialties. And there's just so much variety. Even between the two of us, we both perform reconstructive, anesthetic, or cosmetic surgery.
Okay.
But we can specialize in different aspects of that. So Dr. Barron does a lot of breast and body surgery, body contouring. And I do that as well, but I also really enjoy doing some facial rejuvenation procedures. So for example, that's your non-surgical cases. So your Botox and fillers, which are much more popular now. And I think are becoming much more mainstream. But also you have the surgical aspect of that. So facelifts and rhinoplasties and otoplasties, which is more of like pinning your ears back, or a lip lift. So the list goes on. And I think that creativity and that variety is what draws a lot of people to plastic surgery.
Wow. Do I need facial rejuvenation? I'm just wondering.
Well, so we can always do some facial balancing and harmony.
No, you did not.
You look fine. The thing is, and I think what Dr. Femi Lucy was trying to say is that, you know, everybody should have the opportunity to continue to age gracefully.
Oh, yeah.
So people, you know, look fine. There's nothing wrong with them or anything like that. But a lot of times, as you get to age, if you want to avoid having, you know, wrinkles that are very prominent, you know, at rest when you're not moving your face or animating your face, and sometimes doing preventative Botox or sometimes preventative fillers will make sure you kind of maintain that youthful appearance and age gracefully.
And the key word is gracefully. I think graceful refinement of what people already have is what most plastic surgeons are after. And that's really the crux of the practice that we have is natural, graceful, and creating longevity. We want, you can create some changes right now, but we want to make sure that those changes age well with you and last a lifetime.
Wow. Now, what was it like for you, you know, and what really led you to plastic surgery? Like, what interested you so much in this field to take this route in medicine?
Well, at least for me, when I was in medical school, I wanted to be OBGYN. I was president of the OBGYN club,
wow.
all of that. And then I went and did my surgical rotations. And very first day I got into the operating room, I said, I have to be in here all the time. Okay. So OBGYNs, they operate as well, but I just needed more volume. So I started exploring the different surgical subspecialties. And, I was initially a little bit between orthopedics and plastic surgery. I just liked the operations and I liked the people I encountered. The plastic surgeons I met were pretty down to earth. I felt like they had personalities similar to me.
They some cool people.
You know, yeah, you know.
And surgeons are always happy.
Yeah, you know, and so... you know, and then I looked at the types of operations and I thought that they were just so fascinating. Like you could be doing cleft lip palate repairs on children, you know, all the way to, you know, breast reconstructive surgery for cancer patients, you know, so I liked the variety there. And then, you know, I did away rotations and, you know, I just fell in love with it.
Mm. I used to actually work in the medical field and I used to be a surgical tech for podiatry practice.
Oh, cool.
So I know all about standing up behind the mask and having to stand there still, can't let your hands down.
right.
The outside is the podiatry cases are a little shorter.
Yes, they're definitely
much shorter. We've had some. I had a couple of days in the OR where we was for like 3 or 4 hours and it was springtime. And my allergies was bothering me real bad. And I'm behind this man. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, that's a whole other story. So what led you to plastic surgery?
Interestingly enough, I also at one point was thinking about OBGYN. It's funny. I feel like it's either cardiac surgery for a lot of plastic surgeons or OBGYN is what they were thinking about first. But I'm Nigerian, lived in Nigeria for a little bit. I still have a lot of family there.
Wow.
And when I was in college, I knew I wanted to be a doctor and I was going to spend some time shadowing my uncle, who's an orthopedic surgeon in Nigeria.
Okay.
So that was going to be some of my exposure. And I went there, saw some orthopedic cases, and I was like, this is not for me at all. And he had a colleague who was a plastic surgeon.
Okay.
And he said, well, why don't you spend the rest of the summer with her? And I was just fascinated with the procedures that were going on. Some of them were trauma reconstruction. Some of them were as straightforward as a breast reduction. But just the changes that were that the surgeons were creating for these patients, I was set from that moment. Came back, and as soon as I started medical school, I was like, where is the plastic surgery office? Where are the plastic surgeons? How can I spend more time with them? And that was really sort of what started me. So I went into medical school knowing that I wanted to be a plastic surgeon.
Wow.
And just stayed right on that path until here.
I went into college not knowing what I wanted to do. I still don't someday. Anyway, what type of patients or what type of people do you guys typically see in your practice? Because, you know, of course, everyone assumes it's just women going to get mommy makeovers and this type of stuff. But what type of cases do you guys see?
We see a wide range. The majority of patients that end up coming to our practice are women.
Okay.
But the door is open really for anybody. You know, I would say probably about 75, you know, percent are women, the others men. You know, it's patients who, you know, it's not just rich patients who are coming to get plastic surgery, you know, and spend like, you know, thousands of dollars. The majority of patients are average middle-class people.
Okay.
Who want to improve an aspect of their body or, you know, change something because they either had a child. You know, a lot of my patients are postpartum.
Okay.
You know, they're moms who want to have a mommy makeover and kind of get back or, you know, make an improved version of themselves after having kids. So that's kind of the demographic that at least I see mainly in the practice, patients who want breast and body surgery. You know, but it's women, it's men, it's basically anybody who wants to, you know, improve an aspect of their, you know, body that has bothered them or has just changed,
okay,
you know, as a result of it. But like I said, middle class people who instead of, you know, maybe taking a vacation that year, you know, will spend on themselves and treat themselves. So it's affordable. You know, some people feel like it's out completely out of reach, but it is affordable. But you should do it responsibly when it comes to, you know, economics.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What I was watching on TV one time. And it was the weirdest thing to me. Maybe it's not weird to y'all, but this guy wanted, he was getting, I think, liposuction, but they was also adding like fake muscles on him.
Oh, I see.
So are you talking about like high definition liposuction or implants?
No, implants. Okay. I think.
Yeah, he was getting actually because he wanted his biceps to be bigger.
Yeah.
So I mean, there are several different ways that you can enhance different parts of your body, and some of that is with liposuction. And there's a combination in the techniques that you're doing with the liposuction where you can actually sculpt the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's referred to as high definition liposuction. You have to be a good candidate for that. And I think that's why it's so important to find a surgeon who's going to be honest with you, because you never want to have a bad result. You don't want a surgeon who's going to do exactly what you want because you want it.
Okay.
You want a surgeon who's going to tell you realistically, at the point that you are at, this is the result that I think you can get. And if you're not going to be happy with that result, maybe we need to do something else to get you to that point. So I think that's really the most important part. And then when it comes to implants, there are certain parts of the body that we can, in the same way that you can place a breast implant for an augmentation,
okay,
there are certain parts of the body that you can place implants as well to increase definition or to change the contour.
What's some of the most interesting procedures you guys have done?
I think on a reconstructive scale, it's probably free flap breast mm-hmm. reconstruction. And that essentially entails moving tissue from one part of the body, specifically usually the abdomen, the belly, and disconnecting the blood vessels that feed that skin and fat and moving it to the breast. And that's for patients who have had breast cancer where they need to remove the breast tissue.
Okay.
So you use that tissue from the belly, the skin and the fat, and connect that to blood vessels using a microscope and very small instruments, very small suture, suture material. So the thread that we're stitching the vessels up with, and put that in to help create a new breast for the patient.
Wow.
Long surgery. and
but it's one of my favorites.
I think it's probably one of the more interesting procedures that we do on the reconstructive.
So you literally just suck the fat out and then you inject it back?
It's actually transplanting that tissue.
So you take
that chunk. So almost like the same chunk that you would cut off with a tummy tuck and throw in the trash. You dissect out an artery and a vein that will supply that that tissue and keep it living. So it's literally using spare parts on a patient, you know, to reconstruct something. So, you know, with plastic surgery, it's almost like nothing goes wasted. Right. You know, it's like one surgeon's trash is a plastic surgeon's treasure when it comes down to it. But with that operation, it's life-changing for women. They can get a breast reconstruction that will sustain them lifelong without having to have another surgery or get an implant replaced or anything like that. So, I mean, I would say that's the most interesting surgery for me as well.
Wow.
It's one of my favorite operations, and it's called the deep flap operation. It's named for the blood vessel, but it's a free flap surgery. It takes a lot of skill and expertise. We undergo
a lot of... I can imagine if you got to reattach a blood supply to it.
Yeah, it's a microvascular surgery.
That's next level.
You do it with either an operating room microscope or like very high magnification surgical glasses to be able to see those things as tiny as they are.
Yeah. Wow.
And then for me, on the cosmetic or aesthetic side, I think blepharoplasties are my favorite operation.
Is that blepher?
Blepharoplasty. So it's blepharoplasty.
Blethero. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. Get me right.
So it's okay. It's okay. So it's basically an eyelid lift. And some patients will just need an upper eyelid lift, and some patients also need a lower eyelid lift. And the reason why I like it so much is because it's for the patient, the recovery is not so burdensome, but it really sort of rejuvenates the entire face. If you think about how much time when you speak to someone, what you're really focusing on is their eyes, like this portion of their face. Mm-hmm. So often, and the scars are very minimal. Sometimes you can't even see the scars because we're hiding them on the inside.
Okay.
And really patients just are rejuvenated and they just look so good and they're so happy. And it really takes up to 10 years off of them. And they're just so happy.
Well, and that removes like the bags on the
eyes.
Yeah,
that surgery is for bags on the eyes, or if patients feel like they have a tired look, or if they have mm-hmm. Skin that's drooping over the top eyelid.
Okay.
It can really be, you know, it will just open the eyes. The patient will look refreshed. They'll see people and they'll be like, "What did you have what done?"
No one can really tell. Yeah. They're like, "Did you get your hair done? You look well rested.
Did you get a vacation?
I noticed a few years back, women started putting the lighter eyeshadow under there to reduce the appearance of that.
Yeah, it basically helps with that.
Or you might have heard of, like, I think Bobby Brown did, like, an interview saying that he put Preparation H on his eyelid bags because it actually shrinks that.
Okay.
You know, so
that's I've heard kind of people using Preparation H for other than women.
Yes.
But because that's a new one.
That was off label.
I'm just scared it's gonna get in my eye.
So I mean, it's basically taking care of the bags. You know, wow. People always want to put their best foot forward when it comes to their face.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so I think you know, operation like that definitely feels good.
Mm-hmm. And saying people want to put their best foot forward, I think that really is. One of my goals is to really show patients and educate patients about how facial rejuvenation and facial surgery can seem scary to some patients because everyone
sounds
like,
scary
oh.
to me.
Yeah, but the recovery oftentimes is much easier than surgery on the body.
Okay.
And it really just has such a profound effect on self-esteem, on the way that on confidence, the way people present themselves, because again, it's like you said, you're putting your best face forward. Mm-hmm. And really it's just trying to destigmatize this idea of, oh, I can't touch my face. And it's not necessarily touching. I think as long as you find the right surgeon mm-hmm. and you, for me, the most important thing for my patients is one, that they trust me, and two, that they know that safety is my number one priority. I'm not going to do anything if I don't think it's safe. And then two is I'm not going to do anything that's not going to look natural on you.
Okay.
So I think just helping people understand that this isn't anything to be afraid of. And it's something that can really, really help improve how you feel about yourself.
Wow. Now I have seen that, you know, over the last, I'd say probably 5, 6, 7 years, it's been like an explosion in plastic surgeries. Like everybody's starting to do it. Now, it used to be, like you said, reserved for rich white women and that type of thing. But now you're starting to see just a wide range of people doing it. Number one, explain the dangers of going to these other countries and having these procedures done. Not the main fact, folks getting killed down there, but the other side of it, the medical side of it, the danger.
So I think the first thing that I'll say is that there are well-educated, well-trained surgeons in countries outside of the U.S. So I don't want it to ever be like, we're American, we think we're better than them. There are a lot of very well-trained,
very well-trained
plastic surgeons across the world.
Okay.
But there are also a lot of people who are basically either pretending or trying to lure people in for the financial gain. And I think it's difficult for patients to sift through that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I think one of the biggest dangers is really you want your surgeon to be nearby, right? So every operation is major for the patient, right? Because maybe you've never had surgery before. You want your surgeon close by to you so that you can ask questions. So if you have any issues, you can go see them, things like that. So you want your post-operative course to be something where you have a close rapport with your surgeon. If you're going really far away, it's number one, that's already removed. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest risks to me. And two, it's you just don't know what you're getting. There might be a language barrier. There's so many different things. I'll let Dr. Barron talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, and I echo, you know, the same sentiments. You know, it's questions in different countries. You know, you may have a you haven't seen the facility in which you might potentially be having this operation.
Okay.
You may not know if there are issues with sterility or, you know, cleanliness or anything like that. And then you have not, you likely have not built a relationship with the surgeon that you're seeing. You hear people going, you know, it's medical tourism is basically what it is. You know, maybe talk to like a patient consultant or coordinator prior to. They fly down, you know, meet the surgeon literally minutes before this surgery is supposed to happen. How do you trust that this person really is on the same page as you, you know, when it comes to your body?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I tell patients when I cut on them or operate, like, it's the most intimate type of relationship you will probably have, because I see pieces of you and parts of you that no one will ever see.
Okay.
You know, and so I don't take that lightly. And so I never operate on a patient without having built at least a initial consultation relationship with them and talk to them about their plan. You know, and I want to feel comfortable, you know, just as much as a patient is potentially interviewing me, I'm interviewing the patient when it comes to deciding who to operate on. And so, you know, I think that that stable doctor-patient relationship is not really fostered when you're flying in and flying out afterwards. And so you see patients, you know, if they have a complication, they're very unhappy with everything. But part of that is because that trust was never built to begin with. You know, they felt like, oh, he didn't do or she didn't do what, you know, I said that they were supposed to do. Well, you know, you kind of just, you know, showed up for surgery and paid some money and, you know, didn't really have a defined plan. We didn't have time to think about it. So, you know, like Dr. Famalusi said, lots of great surgeons all over the country. And the thing is that, or all over the world, a lot of these, you know, surgeries where patients are getting injured and are harmed or dying, they're here in the United States as well.
Wow,
so you have surgeons who, like she said, for financial gain, or not even surgeons, other doctors who, you know, who aren't trained plastic surgeons. They have not gone to residencies in order to be trained. They take a weekend course or they shadow somebody and they say, okay, well, I'm going to stop being an OBGYN. And I all of a sudden want to be a cosmetic surgeon. So I'm going to hang a shingle and say that I'm a cosmetic surgeon now. And, you know, it puts patients at risk. There's no way to equate our 14 plus years, six years of which are directed towards plastics and reconstructive surgery. You know, there's no way to equate that to a couple of weekend courses or even at the most, maybe what, 100 hours or something of, you know, supplemental courses. Like, there's no way to equate that training. And, you know, and a lot of what we, learn is not just cosmetic or anything. We are experts in reconstructive surgery. Whatever happens in the operating room or afterwards, I can fix.
Okay.
You know, because we know how to reconstruct and almost any complication, you know. And so when you have not been adequately trained in reconstruction, you can't do that. And so the patient ends up coming to us, you know, because they've had some sort of complication that their other doctor can't fix. So those are things that patients want to watch out for. You know, you would think that everybody, you know, the surgeons should be ethical and really able to disclose what their training is, you know, but the patients, you know, I tell them just as much as you're going to research a house and shop around or a car and do your research, you have to do the same with your surgeon. Absolutely. Because, you know, it can be life changing.
Instagram is not good enough research.
Right.
Tell me this, what was going on when you started to see like all these women, I think they were getting a Brazilian butt lift and like the tissue was dying or it was just like dropping or something like that was going on. I forgot, it was one of them housewives, I think, that did it. And then it really exploded onto the scene. Everybody started paying attention.
So what can happen if the tissue dies or is, you know, sometimes people over-inject fat. So historically, the Brazilian butt lift is where you liposuction fat from somewhere else, and then it's re-injected into the buttocks. And so if you over-inject, then that fat graft cannot get adequate blood supply. And so, and your skin envelope, your skin can only hold so much.
Okay.
So it either starts to squeeze back out the incisions and leak, Or it can internally die and cause hard spots.
Wow.
You know, a lot of women on TV as well have not had the Brazilian butt lift, but they've also had just regular off-label black market buttock injections.
Okay.
You know, so it's kind of like, you know, the celebrities have kind of done everything. And it's kind of up to us to educate the public on what these things might be and let them know, like, you might not necessarily want to go for that, because if you go for these exaggerated results, then, you know, they're not going to age well. You know, like if you're talking about, you know, it's kind of dropping down, doesn't look the same, you know, extremes don't age well. Our tagline is natural, but noticeable. Okay. I want everything that I do to a patient to be able to age well with them. You know, I don't want 10 years from now, someone saying like, yeah, Dr. Barron did my surgery. Now. And I'm like, no, we don't want that. Nope, you know, we want patients to be able to age well with it. So,
and I think just going off of what you're saying, I think in plastic surgery or in the aesthetic world in general, there are a lot of trends that come and go.
Okay.
And the thing is, you never want to be following the trends, especially with your body, with your face, with you were made the way you were made. And that can be enhanced, refined in different ways, but the goal is to still keep you looking like you. Mm-hmm. And you never want to be, because those trends, like I said, are going to come and go. Mm-hmm. And 10 years from now, what looks good now isn't necessarily what's going to look good then. Mm-hmm. You're always going to be playing catch up. And that's not what you want to do with one, major surgery, and two, with your body in general. Right. So really, it's just figuring out what your particular aesthetic ideal is in the setting of your body, and us sticking to that goal and not trying to stay on top of what the latest trend is. Because as you see, even with fillers, now the trend is going more natural and people dissolving things. So if you are someone that really ran away with the idea of like really, really high cheekbones and crazy defined jawline, now you're going to be trying to reverse all of that. Mm-hmm. And one, it costs money to do those things. And two, you kind of lose yourself in that trying to chase your tail. Really, what you want to be doing is just focusing on what you think will make you look good and what will remain natural long term.
Mm-hmm. What's the patient's responsibility to you guys? And it's like, how many visits do you see a patient before you decide, okay, I'm willing to do surgery on you? Or what health requirements do they need to have in this type of thing?
You want to come in?
Yeah. So, for me, Dr. Barron mentioned, I'm interviewing the patient as much as the patient is interviewing me. It's a two-way street. I don't want to operate on anyone who I don't think is going to follow post-operative instructions, right? Because, again, our goal is to do this safely and to do this in the best way possible. So there are certain, we sort of join into a partnership where we're a team, and I do my part in doing the operation well, safely, with the best technique. And your end of that bargain is to follow the instructions that will help you keep that result. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. I think in our practice, the way it works is you come in for a consultation, which is usually 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
The patient discusses their concerns. We examine them. We talk about what we think the best plan for them is. And then at that point, the patient can then decide if they want to proceed with surgery. Now, that time period can be a matter of days. It can be a matter of weeks.
Okay.
But really, for me, it's like, I'm happy to talk to a patient a second time. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to have you come back a second time if you have extra questions. Mm-hmm. You want it. So we can do multiple consults, really, just to make sure that we're on the same page.
Okay.
Because I want to understand what your goal is. And I want to make sure that I can achieve what you want before we enter the operating room. After surgery, so then you get a preoperative appointment for surgery. And in that point, we're going over, you've gotten clearance from your doctor. We're going over your lab work. We're making sure you're safe for surgery, that there's nothing that needs to be optimized with regards to your health. Surgery day happens, and then you're seen in clinic a week after.
Okay.
I love seeing my patients. So I'm going to see you a week after. I'm going to see you at 1 month. I'm going to see you at 3 months. I'm going to see you at 6 months, and I'm going to see you at a year. I just want to make sure that there's no point in time that anything is going off course or off plan. And if there is, then we're right there to help you to figure out what we need to do to make things go in the direction that they should be doing. We want to make sure that patients aren't scared after surgery. And if they have any questions, that they're answered. Our phone, you can call at any point during the day. Someone will get back to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what you get having a doctor that or a surgeon that's here with you, as opposed to having a doctor that's in a different country where they're speaking it, potentially speaking it, there's a language barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they get full service. Okay, exactly. It's all inclusive. You know, really, when it comes down to it. And so, there's no one night stands.
No,
okay. You know, we will not operate and then not see a patient. I see patients from out of town all the time.
Okay.
You know, but I let them know, like, if we're going into this, you know, if we're going to do this together, you have to have the means to come back.
Okay.
You know, not only for, you know, just routine post-ops, but if for some reason there is a minor complication or anything like that, I'm going to want to see you. And sometimes it's more than just a video visit. You have to put hands on a patient,
okay.
You know? And so I let them know, like, it's a commitment. If you're coming from California, you have to be able to come back if for some reason something happens, or you need to be able to stay in Atlanta for a period of time, or, you know, if anything. But I like to see back and see my results, because that's how we learn, you know, the best way that we learn, you know, from different body types, different tissues, things like that. You know, we're going to be able to learn best by seeing our patients. Even our long-term results are where you learn the most, years later, you know, so that we know exactly, you know, that we're doing the best thing for that patient.
Now, what are some of the potential risk involved in plastic surgery? I mean, it's surgery, so we know there are, you know, risks. What are some of those risks that patients encounter?
Well, any risks
I need to be aware of.
Yeah, right? There's a risk with any type of surgery. There are, you know, general risks, you know, blood clots, you know, bleeding, infections, things like that. Those are, you know, when it comes to plastic surgery, most of those are minor. There's general risk from anesthesia, you know, but we disclose all that to the patient. You know, that's the important part of having an informed consultation, having a pre-op appointment to where they can bring a family member and, you know, talk about things specifically, you know, related to the surgery. You know, the most risks are minor, you know, but as far as plastic surgery, when it comes to like larger procedures or longer procedures, like mommy makeovers, you know, where you're combining like a tummy tuck and liposuction, potentially blood clots. You know, that's something that patients are very concerned about. That's what we're very concerned about.
Okay.
So we make sure that we put in the correct measures to decrease the patient's risk of having an adverse event after surgery.
Now what's the patient's responsibility after this? Because a lot of these with these mommy makeovers, if you're just taking it out, it can come back, right?
So
I hear on the radio they advertise now you can stop the fat, it won't ever come back. But.
No, not necessarily.
There's
you know,
no magic bullet.
Yeah. So yes, I remember seeing something saying that fat cells have have accepted their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ because they live forever and they have eternal life. But the patient's responsibility, and we talk about this, is that they have to keep up the results.
Okay.
You know, just like they've, you know, done the research for this car or this house that they're buying, you know, the investment in themselves, the same thing. You're not going to buy a car and not change the oil. Well, I guess some people, but, you know, or not change, you know, put air in the tires and that whole type of thing. You need to keep up this investment. And I tell patients that all the time. So that involves being healthy prior to surgery, being healthy afterwards. Not smoking cigarettes, you know, really keeping up a workout regimen so that you can continue to fine tune results. Because if I do a tummy tuck and everything's nice and tight, but you just do nothing and you just let it all hang out, my repair will be tight in the center. But then sometimes people can stretch around that.
Wow.
You know, I've had patients who come back, you know, a year later and they've gained like 40 pounds. You know, yes, I can take your money and operate on you again, but I really don't want that from my patients. You know, I really want them to, you know, really sustain the results that we intended to have at when we embarked on this plan to begin with. And so you need to keep up your results by exercising, having some degree of level of fitness, eating well, you know, and like we said, not smoking, you know, prior to surgery or for a certain period of time afterwards, because that can affect the blood supply of your tissues as they're trying to heal. So, you know, just as much as we have skin in the game, you know, when it comes to operating, the patients do too, you know, because we want them to be happy afterwards. You know, I don't want patients just coming back because they're not adhering to, you know, the post-operative plan, you know, because there will come a point in time where I'm not going to operate again, you know, because it's just too much, because, you know, plastic surgery is not weight loss surgery. You know, it's not a cure all or a fix all for any type of, you know, issue that you might be going through, you know? And so that's what the important role that we have as surgeons is, really trying to suss out, you know, a patient's motivations and making sure that they have the correct motivations when they want to have surgery, because everybody's not a good candidate. And I say no all the time.
Okay.
You know, when it comes down to it. So I mean,
that's one of the most important parts of being a plastic surgeon is understanding when to say no and being able to say no easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, y'all ever deal with, I cannot think of the name of this disease that causes people to do this, but you know, the people that just get way too much plastic surgery and they just keep coming back. I want my nose. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily a very common condition.
True body dysmorphia.
I think a lot of people have parts of their body that they're not happy with. And I think with social media, that there's a little bit more of like nitpicking and being very judgmental about ourselves specifically. But true body dysmorphia, the diagnosis itself, it's not very common. But when you do come across a patient like that, really the most important thing is not operating on them and referring them to the help that they need, which is usually a psychologist or a psychiatrist, which are the people who can help them understand that what they're seeing about themselves is not truly what's there. Really operating on a patient like that is doing them a disservice. So it's really understanding that and trying to help them get the help that they need.
Wow.
Yeah, but body dysmorphia is really a patient obsessing about a certain body part.
Okay.
You know, and not in, like she said, seeing something, you know. That so a lot of people think that, you know, Michael Jackson had body dysmorphia when it came to his nose.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, initially, what, after the Thriller photo album, you know, where you got the first couple of nose jobs, everybody's like,
it was crazy towards the end, though. He looked like a skeleton.
Yes, but the thing is that you find, you know, where initial surgeons may have said, no, you don't need another operation, there's always somebody who will potentially operate. But just because you can doesn't mean that you should, you know. So I think it's important. There's a certain amount of kind of psychological evaluation we have to go through with the patients to, you know, make sure that they have those correct motivations. But it's tough out here when it comes to social media. You know, you have these Instagram models that are all over your feed, you know, but the majority of them are using, well, I wouldn't say the majority, let me not get beat up. You know, but there's a subset of people who are using, and to which it's not really real.
Okay.
They're using Photoshop. They're using filters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, patients are coming in talking about, oh, I want to look this way, how this filter makes me look or whatever, you know? And so I think, you know, some of those things can be potentially dangerous, you know, mentally. For patients. And I think, you know, we see it, it affects their mental health and they want to look how in real life, how they look in a particular picture, you know, but I see a lot of patients when it comes to the body, they're like, oh, I need my waist smaller. And I'm like, your waist literally can't be smaller because I'm feeling your rib cage right here with the, you know, people know how to work the angles when it comes to photos.
Okay.
And a lot of these women that you see with these tiny, tiny waists and, you know, fuller hips, it's not necessarily that their waist is so tiny. They may have gotten fat injected into the hips or fillers or anything like that to make the hips appear wider and the, you know, the waist appear more narrow.
Look crazy to me. I don't know what's wrong
or it's a filter or it's Photoshop or whatever, you know. So I think, you know, not going with the trends like Dr. Famalusi said are important. And really, you know, if there's something that you want to change about yourself that you've always wanted to do, or if it comes up, then that's okay.
Okay.
You know, but going with the trends just because everyone else is doing it will never, you know, fare out well in the long run.
You know, I was looking on Instagram the other day. I was just scrolling through it and I forgot what I was actually looking at. But a new thing is a vaginoplasty. Like, are you serious?
Well, it's not.
It's for real?
It's not necessarily.
Okay.
It's not necessarily a new thing.
No,
there are some women who, for multiple different reasons, want some aspect of vaginal rejuvenation.
Okay.
Whether that's after childbirth and they're having issues with incontinence.
You can rejuvenate it.
Yeah.
Right.
For that reason, or they're having pain, and there are different procedures
that
you can do to help with those symptoms. So yeah, it's something that some patients need and people are happy to provide that service for them.
So is there such thing as a penile plastic or? Yeah, I guess you can just put plaster behind any body part and make it something, plastic, right?
Plastic essentially modifying something.
Yes, you can. I mean, people do fat grafting to the penis to increase the width. They do,
really?
penile implants and stuff like that are normally done by urologists.
Yeah. Okay.
But there are some plastic surgeons who are doing, fat injections to the penis to increase the width and things like that.
It's not our ministry.
Not a service that we offer, so we'll leave that to those experts. But
you ain't got
to
worry about them. Not analysts. I'm good. Tell us a little bit about your practice. Where is your practice located?
So our practice is located in Marietta, right off of Windy Hill Road, very accessible, close to Truist Park, accessible to all the highways. It is breast body beauty, plastic and reconstructive surgery. We offer really the full range of plastic surgery, breast and body contouring, breast reconstructive surgery. And what does that mean? Breast contouring or cosmetic surgery, breast implants, breast reductions, breast lifts, fat grafting to the breast, as far as body, liposuction, tummy tucks, Brazilian butt lifts or gluteal fat transfers, thigh lifts, skin surgeries for after patients have had massive weight loss.
Okay.
Or arm surgeries, brachioplasties, when it comes to the body. In addition to that, Dr. Famlucy and myself do eyelid surgeries, liposuction of the chin, minimally invasive or non-invasive to the face. She's going to take up the facelifts, neck lifts, all those things that are going to keep people aging gracefully.
And augmentations. List goes on and on.
And we do Botox and fillers and then some, energy-based services in the office to kind of, have people, come in on their lunchtime and get some rejuvenation.
All right. I need some rejuvenation for you. Because now I feel some type of way.
Oh, no. You look fine.
You look wonderful.
No, you do not.
But
you
sunscreen and skincare, everyone.
Everyone needs.
Okay. Everyone needs. Does.
So, yes. I'm trying to stay light skin.
That's the best way to stay young. Take care of your skin.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. And eat well. Yeah. Eat right.
Now, if anybody wants to find you, if they want to book an appointment, how can they do that?
Well, they can give our office a call. Our number is 678-540-1144. They can go to our website, which is breastbodybeauty.com. You can reach out to me on social media or actually the practice page on social media, which is at Breast Body Beauty. My personal handle is at Breast and Body Doc. And Dr. Famalusi's.
Mine is at Dr. Famalusi.
All right. So you're going to have to spell that for our audience. We enjoy it.
Familusi.
Yes. And so they can reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram. We have TikTok pages, LinkedIn, the whole gamut. But we're easily searchable on
All right. What's the best way for anybody that might be watching or listening? What's the best way for them to book an appointment?
Really to call the office.
Okay.
Call the office. You can speak with our patient coordinator to really figure out what procedure is the best for you. And we can get you scheduled. We're always open for new consultations. Dr. Famalusi is already busy and, really wanting to, really get out there and offer her services. So we're available.
Now, is this just for patients that might be watching? Is this something that's typically covered by my insurance, or is this something that I need to be expecting to cash pay?
So reconstructive procedures, so some breast reductions and breast reconstruction after cancer, those reconstruction after skin cancer, that's covered by insurance. Cosmetic surgeries, so some of the breast and body contouring, so breast augmentation, breast lifts, tummy tucks, mommy makeovers, facelifts, Botox fillers, those are you would pay out of pocket for. Those are not cash covered by insurance.
Okay. Well, just give us that number one more time so everybody can write it down.
It's 678-540-1144. You can reach us at breastbodybeauty.com, on the website, and we're here.
I'm coming and get a consultation. The consultation free.
No, I ain't give me no free consultation. So consultations are $100. It's because our time is valuable. We're going to sit down for really about an hour with you, talking with you, examining, really giving a good plan, giving a cosmetic or surgical quote, when it comes down to it. So, the thing is our time is valuable. So, it also decreases the chance that people just no show. So you gotta buy in.
Hey, people don't value what they don't pay for. I gotta tell you.
Exactly.
Well, once again, it has been another wonderful episode of Number One Rated Business Show. Thank you so much, Dr. Famalusi and Dr. Barron, for coming in. Spending time with me today and explaining this world to us, because it's just amazing, the explosion that we're seeing, and people wanting plastic surgery and wanting to better themselves and be more beautiful and more vibrant looking. I do feel some type of way now because
don't look too hard on it. No, but thank you so much. We really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you.
Not a problem. Until next time, shout out to my engineer today. Thank you so much for jumping in and helping me. Love you so much, Miss Jess Love. I told y'all I'm going to get you. But no, thank y'all so much. I will be back next week with another great guest. Until then, we are out.
You are welcome.